The Tennessee Power Hour is here, Friday edition, alongside Chad Withrow and Paul Koharski. I'm Jonathan Hutton as we broadcast from the 6th and Peabody Studios in downtown Nashville with Yeehaw Brewing and Old Smoky Distillery. They had the big moonshine delivery earlier here today. Some of the ingredients where they have the distillery back behind us. Trucks and trucks of vats of ingredients. So
no better delivery than a moonshine delivery. I've said that for years, honey.
Yeah, so if you're in town, you can see how it's made. They have the distillery right here on site at 6th and Peabody downtown. Austin Price with VolQuest.com. He and Brent join us weekly at this time as we get into the Tennessee Volunteers athletic program, and we always talk football. Just Austin today as Brent is off doing some other duties for VolQuest.com this afternoon. Austin, hope you're doing well, man. How are things?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
Doing well. Tell us what's going on internally with the Tennessee quarterback job right now. Not what they have said about Joe Milton and Hendon Hooker. What do you think they're saying privately about the two based on last week?
Well, I think that, you know, they don't want to give up on Joe Milton. And so I think that's why, you know, they tried to keep him, you know, as much engaged as possible this week. And, you know, in reality, he's not done a whole lot. And, you know, it's been the kind of Hendon Hooker show at practice each day. And so, you know, I think you'll see if they both can go, as far as Joe being able to go, if Joe can go, you will see both play Saturday. If not, it'll be Hendon Hooker and then Harrison Bailey. But I mean, multiple quarterbacks are going to play. And right now, if Joe can't go tomorrow, then he probably ain't going, or at least he won't start at Florida a week from now.
Can you teach accuracy at this point and touch with a quarterback? Or is it beyond reach with Joe Milton? And has this staff seen flashes of him, at least, being able to connect with a deep pass? Because just in the games right now, Austin, he hasn't shown any ability to do that.
No. I mean, and you would think law of averages, Chad, you're going to hit one of those deep balls. But no, not to this point. I think that's something you can fractionally get better at. I'm not sure that you all of a sudden master having touch. You know, because, I mean, look, him throwing the ball looks so effortless. I mean, you know, you go back to the one where he overthrew Cedric Tillman. Chad, did it not look like he knew, hey, I've got to put a little air under this, and he tried to not throw it as hard, and it still went like 47 yards. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, yeah. I think he knows. It's just a matter of it just not happening.
Well, let's talk about Hendon Hooker now and what you saw from him, because, you know, the kind of the rap on him in spring was he wasn't always the most accurate of quarterbacks. And we saw that flash a couple times where I don't know if he was trying to throw it out of harm's way or what happened, but he threw it way out of bounds to some guys when he's just trying to hit the quick hitter. But he did also show a little bit of touch at times, and he brings what I think is a better ability to run into the offense. So overall, what did you make of Hendon Hooker's day against Pitt?
You're right. You know, he had the one fumble. Got to protect the ball a little bit better. The pick I thought was a bad pick. You know, and then of course he had the old you know, Mox from Varsity Blues where he knocks the guy off the horse throw when he threw it like to the third row at one point. But outside of those three, I mean, plays. I mean, I thought he played really well. He did throw it with much better touch than Joe has thrown it with. And he does give you that extra dynamic. It's not Josh Dobbs, but it's Dobbs-esque with his ability to make plays in the open field. And I do think that, honestly, that hurt him in fall camp, guys. When you're in that red jersey and you can't showcase that portion of your game, like I think that hurts your ability to, you know, win the job or show the staff fully what you can do.
Austin Price with us. You can follow him on Twitter at Austin Priceless. Harrison Bailey is all the talk of fans. Where is he in the pecking order on Saturday?
Well, it depends on Joe Milton, but, you know, I mean, he's currently sitting third overall and, you know, is one that, you know, the fans, that's just a struggle, man. I mean, like the fans, you know, they look at it and all they can see is what he was ranked at the end of the recruiting cycle. He was a four-star for the longest time. they win 7A in the state of Georgia, and he gets his fifth star, and it really just put just terrible expectations on the kid. I mean, everybody, you know, all of a sudden morphed into feeling like this kid's riding in on the white horse to save Tennessee's football program, and that's really not fair. So, you know, he's still progressing. He's still getting better. He's not consistent. And, you know, when you find me a coach at any level of football, especially high school, college, or in the NFL, that will play a kid that doesn't practice well and start him, especially at the quarterback position, then to me, you found a unicorn at that point, because there's just not any coach out there that's going to do that. And he doesn't practice consistent enough to be the guy. To me, what he's got to do is he has to find a way into the football game by a poor play from someone in front of him or an injury from someone in front of him, and then take advantage of that opportunity.
Is there anything, Austin, that Hendon Hooker can do against Tennessee Tech that would make him the guy next week in Florida? Or are they playing both?
You know, that's a question for Josh Heupel. I think that, you know, if Joe can't play tomorrow and you know, I just have a hard time believing he starts at Florida. And then, when, you know, if Hooker gets to start at Florida, he'll have the chance to be the guy, much like Joe's been the guy.
Yep.
You know, they only went to Hendon Hooker when Joe got hurt, not because Joe overthrew 33 receivers in a row. You know, I think they were trying to stick with – they were trying to give Joe Milton, let him play his way out of the funk, you know, continue to play through it. And it's kind of like a shooter in basketball. Like, you, if you're in a slump, you got to shoot your way out of it, man. Just going over and sitting on the side is really not going to do anything for you. I think they want to let their quarterbacks play through it.
You guys mentioned at VolQuest that this game maybe provides a chance for Willie Martinez to try some new wrinkles. What's your best guess as to what some of those might be for them to expand?
Well, I think that they'll try to play Kamal Haddon. They'll try to play Brandon Turnage. At safety, Christian Charles is going to get a lot more run, Paul. You know, same thing with, you know, some of those younger safeties as well. You know, Tamarion McDonald's a guy that, you know, I think Tennessee wants to continue to slide in there. The secondary's got to have more depth going forward. You know, and you know, these kids have to have reps on the field to earn the trust of Willie Martinez and Tim Banks. So I think Saturday goes a long way to kind of seeing, not that Tennessee Tech's any kind of real barometer, but like, how do you line up? What mental mistakes do you make in the football game? Those type of things are what they're looking for to see, you know, hey, can I trust this kid at the Swamp? Can I trust this kid at Missouri in 2 weeks? You know, when they come back home for South Carolina or Ole Miss. I think that's what they're looking for out of some of these young DBs. They've got to be deeper at that position. And, you know, they definitely have the bodies there. It's just about the trust from the coaches.
Austin, before we talk about the current team and moving forward, I do want to sort of shut the book on Pitt and ask you just your broad takeaway from a game where it's difficult to know exactly what Tennessee is, because they look really good at times. They played a good team down to the wire, but they repeatedly shot themselves in the foot also. Three turnovers to none for Pitt, all the penalties, everything else. When you come away from that game, what's the biggest takeaway about this Tennessee team and maybe what you learned about them in that game?
Well, I learned that Tennessee has, you know, got a team that's going to continue to fight, Chad. You know, they continue to, you know, really battle last week, you know, more so than, you know, at any point last year. And you know, when you look at where they were a year ago, they would have mailed that game in, lost by 3 or 4 scores, in my opinion. And, you know, they battled. You look at all that went against them last week, and some of it, or a good portion of it, was self-inflicted. The overthrows, self-inflicted. The turnovers, 3-0, self-inflicted. You can't control players being out. You know, you can't control other things, but the penalties, self-inflicted. And Tennessee only lost that game by 7 and had the ball twice in the fourth quarter driving, trying to tie the football game. you know, that for me, like I took a lot of positives out of it because a year ago that game they lose by 3 or 4 scores.
Positive is the right word to describe Josh Heupel. The guy has always got a sense of positivity about everything that he does. When you look at Josh Heupel and his comments, some of them this week, Austin, is that more of him having an issue or a problem with their preparation last week against Pitt? Or is this just sending the message about having consistent preparation as you get ready for a really bad Tennessee Tech team?
Well, no, I think that he was very frustrated with some of the players last week for being late to stuff, late in the week, that type of thing. So I think more than anything, that's what he's been preaching all week's accountability. Hey, how you handle yourself 36 hours before kickoff can directly affect how you handle yourself on game day. And that's kind of been the battle cry all week, if you want to go that route, of just, you know, hey, you have to do the little things. Like, you know, it's all a process. As he said the other day, when I asked him, I said, when you were a player, did you want to just get back to the game field or did you want to get to the practice field after a loss? And he said, players want to play. And he's right, you know. But he went on to acknowledge you have to do all the other little things throughout the week to get to the game. So it all works hand in hand. But, you know, I think he was just frustrated with some of the decisions and maybe some immaturity of you know, nothing like nothing that's a real big deal, but little things that they want to clean up going forward, that they don't want, you know, players to be, you know, okay with being late to stuff, okay with, you know, not being on point and dotting all I's and crossing all T's.
So I need to fall on the sword here. I read.
Yes, you do. I've been reading the text.
Austin, you sent me a text during the show today as we're doing the show here at 6th and Peabody, and I read it wrong. I thought you sent me a text that said Hubs can't do longer or can't do today, and you said can, and I read it wrong, and I just assumed Hubs wasn't joining us after we had discussed this earlier in the week. Hubs has been in the waiting room. Why he's been sitting in the waiting room, I'm not sure. I'm glad of his patience here. But Brent Hubs is on the Zoom chat now, I believe. Hubs, are you there, and how angry are you with us right now, or me specifically?
Well, I mean, I went and put on a collared shirt today. Austin apparently is dictating my schedule with what I'm going to do and I'm not going to do. And
that's what happens when you have a secretary.
I've been sitting in some mysterious virtual waiting room for. I feel like I've been sitting through a 3.5 minute CBS television break during a 3:30 college football game.
Or a college football halftime show.
Let me pile on, if I may.
Sure,
got you in a vulnerable spot. Earlier this week, I put forth my theory that Brent and Brett are pretty much the same name. Your thoughts?
It was like the end suddenly silent or something. I mean, what does that mean, Paul?
It's just the same difference.
Well, okay, well, let's just add an A to yours, and you'll be Paula for the rest of the hour. How's that?
It's a different letter.
To each their own.
He wanted to name Chad's firstborn Paula.
It's also
Pauline.
I mean, this is real disrespect for Brent Hubs that we have to apologize for because
I've gone back to read the text from Austin, and I read it wrong.
Speaking of piling on, his Gibbs Eagles last night lost on television.
Come on.
And Austin Price was on the call of it. And we go to Austin and not Brent. I mean, this is just salt on the wound right now.
Yeah. We owe you. We'll give you some moonshine.
Yeah, we got a lot of salt. We got a lot of salt in that one. Thanks. After last night, I need a lot of that.
Coming up, Brent Hubs and Austin Price.
No, let's just make the promo. Brent Hubs, when we come, the godfather of University of Tennessee coverage, Brent Hubs.
I'm going back in the holding room? Is that what's going to happen now?
3.5 minutes.
Austin could go sit in his car with his seatbelt on some more.
But this is the difference. This is the difference between.
Get in your car seat.
This is the difference between Austin and Brent.
Just in case Austin's car starts rolling, he's got to have that seatbelt on.
This is the difference of personality. Austin would have hung up, and he's probably already hung up now. He would have hung up 2 minutes in to Brent's wait time. Hubs finally sent a text. He waited like 8 minutes and then finally sent a text like, oh, by the way, I'm in the waiting room, guys. So, again, Brent Hubs and Austin Price with us. We will talk tempo when we come back. I brought up earlier this week, there's good and bad with this Tennessee offense, and it's all about one word, tempo. That's straight ahead on Outkick 360. FallQuest.com is the website. That's where you can find both Brent Hubs and Austin Price, unlike the first segment of Outkick 360's Tennessee Power Hour today. Yes, Brent.
Did you guys ever see that Seinfeld episode where they're at the Chinese restaurant like they can't get a table? That's been the last 30 minutes of my life. I'm George Costanza today. Thank you very much.
Oh.
Paul, your thoughts?
Cartwright! Table for three, Cartwright!
I am going to – here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to redirect now. I'm going right – is Austin even still on with us? Or did
I think
off?
He's there. Unless
okay.
He's...
Well, I'm going right to Brent. Austin, I don't even care what you think about the answer to this question, all right? This question is for Brent Hubs, who just kindly waited in the waiting room for us to go to him with any question about Tennessee football. Here's my question, Brent. Running back rotation right now. With Jabari Small probably going to rest and get ready for Florida next week, is Tyon Evans back this week? And the main question I have here, is D. Beckwith still a part of this football team? And is he going to factor in at all at running back in this game against Tennessee Tech?
He is still a part of the team at this point. I don't know where he factors in. He's buried down the depth chart. But they have to find somebody else at the running back position. And this is a game where they got to find and see what they have with some young guys at various spots, and running back is being one of those. They clearly did not have the trust, Austin, in the second half after Jabari Small couldn't go and Tyon Evans was out. They didn't have trust in anybody other than Jalen Wright, which is why he played every snap of offense in the second half when they had a running back on the field. I'm not saying you go into a game saying, hey, we got four backs and we got to get all these guys carry, but you have to have a fourth guy that you have some trust in case you get into a situation you got to go further down your depth chart.
Oh, you're 100% right about that. And when you think about, you know, that, you know, they just haven't played Lenith Whitehead to this point through two games. And you know, they've not been able to, you know, kind of get any traction there with any of the other guys. It is a bit of a head scratcher. I think Whitehead plays a lot coming up tomorrow. But Tyon Evans will play in this football game. He's practiced all week. I'm not sure why Coach Heupel said that, you know, he's not been cleared. I mean, because he had no injury. We all know why he missed last week. And, you know, that's something you don't have to be cleared from. You either get to the point where you can return or you can't. And since he's been around the team practicing, he can.
Guys, staying on offense, two guys that I think probably excited Tennessee fans, at least excited me watching them on Saturday. Jimmy Callaway and that touchdown on the screen pass, when you take that still shot of where he catches it and how he's pinned up against the sideline and somehow scored a long touchdown on that, it's exciting to see that level of explosiveness with a Tennessee receiver. And the other one is Jacob Warren, who I thought really acquitted himself well in that game. Brent, we'll start with you on this one. What did you make of both those guys and just pass-catching options as a whole for this team? Where is Tennessee right now?
Well, I mean, I think the emergence of the tight ends helps them give them some more weapons. My biggest takeaway from those guys was the fact that schematically they got those guys open. I mean, Jacob Warren, they get him open in the middle of the field because they schemed some stuff up. Now, the touchdown pass he had was a great throw by Hooker, great ball location, on a solidly designed play. The other one was clearly a schematic thing to get Warren open in the middle of the field. Callaway's a guy that showed a lot of quickness and speed. I think that's kind of his game. We'll see how he further develops as he gets healthy. But there's no doubt that you come away with this game from that game, if you're playing the positive side of it, that those are a couple of weapons, the tight end position and Callaway are two guys that you think, hey, they can help this team moving forward because of what we saw on Saturday against Pitt for sure.
Austin, start with you and then we'll get Brent's thoughts. I mentioned earlier this week my takeaway from Pitt, and look, it was a close game, But there were times in that first half where they're going so fast. The Tennessee offense, I'm thinking, slow it down and get just run a little clock and get a breather on the sideline for your defense. Otherwise, this is going to get ugly. Now, it didn't, but I thought that was a typical game that could get away. And you alluded to that earlier, and you took some positives away of the fact that it didn't. Is this offense capable of sustaining a long drive? Like, where do you view it right now versus what they need to do when SEC play rolls around?
Well, I think their long drive would be some of Hooker's drives a week ago where they did go slower. You know, I mean, Brent pointed this out right after the game and talked about it a bit in the days after the loss to Pitt, was just the difference in speed with Hendon Hooker. And part of that, you know, I was a bit puzzled by, just because, I mean, he was here all spring. So, like, why did they go slower? Like, I mean, you know, it's not like, you know, he's, unaccustomed to, you know, going fast. They tried to go that fast tempo in the spring. But, you know, I think what they did in the second half, you know, isn't the pace that maybe Josh Heupel wants, but I think it's still a good pace. You know, so I think that's about as slow as they're going to go. Like, late in the game, I'm sure they can milk it down to zero when they're trying to run the clock out. But, you know, in any time between kickoff and 5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, I think they're going to be trying to go as fast as they can.
Well, they here's what Josh Heupel believes about tempo. He believes tempo is another playmaker for him in his offense. You know, we just talked about the tight ends. Mm-hmm. We talked about Jimmy Callaway and those things. He believes that the tempo is another weapon and is another playmaker for them. If they hit a couple of those deep balls in the first quarter and they blitzed them 21-0, then the tempo is absolutely working. They got Pitt two or three times with too many men on the field. He sees that as a weapon. Now, does it make it hard on the defense? Absolutely. No question. Particularly when you don't make a first down, because your three and out takes about 45 seconds off the clock. But he is committed. Josh Heupel has long been committed to using tempo to his advantage, similar to what Chip Kelly did at Oregon for years. Austin's right. If they need to slow it down at times, I think they can slow it down and kind of run a four-minute clock and milk a game away a little bit. But I don't think you're going to see them say, you know what, we need to protect our defense, and we're going to – they're establishing their identity and who they are, and Josh Heupel wants to go fast all the time.
Yeah, and I mean, I get it. I enjoy the tempo, but there are times in the first half when they didn't hit on those big plays, and I felt like Pitt was about to run away with it, and again, they didn't. But the feeling at the time that I jotted down was, man, a four-minute drive, even if they end up punting – could be a win for this offense right now to just sustain a possession instead of, like you're saying, go three and out in 45 seconds and give it right back to a very talented quarterback in a Pitt offense. I realize that he views it as a sin, and he says absolutely not. I'm just intrigued by the mindset and the mentality of that when you face maybe a tougher offense that is capable of adding points to a scoreboard quickly.
No, I understand it, and I think the point's there. I just know where his mindset is, and you look at what the detriment was in the first game against Bowling Green. It didn't matter because it was Bowling Green, but I think Tennessee ran seven snaps in the second quarter, the entire second quarter. That's all they got offensively because they couldn't make a first down to start a drive and stay on the field. So I think that's why the stat of that first down is such a big one for this team and this offense when they get the football to start a drive, because that's the only way that they're going to, A, get in a rhythm, B, burn a little clock, because they're going to go fast. And if it's three and out, it's going to be way super fast.
Austin, I know you're about to bolt on us for another assignment. Hubs is sticking with us for another 5 minutes or so. Your final thoughts as you head into the weekend and what you want to see from Tennessee and Tennessee Tech tomorrow?
Just stay injury free. I mean, you know, this is one of those games where Furman shut out Tennessee Tech a week. Tennessee Tech's not very good at quarterback. Tennessee should win this game rather handily. And, you know, I think it's just kind of stay injury free and then continue to kind of build depth. You know, I think that's the biggest thing is, you know, let's see how, you know, those corners and safeties, those young corners and safeties, how they do, how they get graded out coming out of this game. Are they mentally able to handle themselves to where Willie Martinez and Tim Banks say, hey, we can count on them, or we think we can count on them a week from now or 2 weeks from now. that type of thing. That's the biggest thing, is just stay relatively healthy, because this team's just real thin. They can't afford injuries.
Thanks, Austin. Brent, I'm just wondering, to put a bow on the Pitt game, everybody knew that was going to be the most telling of these three games before you get into SEC season. Your subscriber base, the city of Knoxville, everybody say, well, we're going to have to wait longer because of the way that game was, that it didn't offer any kind of definitive answer?
I think that there was, as the weeks went on, as the week has gone on, there's been some people kind of looking more towards glass half full and kind of pulling away some positives from it, some things that they saw in the game that they like. As we talked about the tight ends, we talked about Callaway, some things on defense, you know, Theo Jackson's continued play. But, you know, for the first day or two after the game, it was much about the fourth and one call, not getting under center on fourth and short, and not being able to execute there, not getting off the field in a couple of third down situations defensively, lack of pass rush there. And then obviously the rest of the week has been about the quarterback situation and what are they going to do? Who's going to be the quarterback for this team? Why are we not seeing Harrison Bailey? I mean, there's a pretty good debate, divide, whatever you want to call it, in kind of what quarterback camp fan X and fan Y are going into. And there's a lot of people wondering why you haven't seen Harrison Bailey. There's a lot of real concern about whether or not Joe Milton can elevate his game and perform. And then Hendon Hooker did some good things, but obviously turned it over. So the most dominating conversation for Tennessee fans is, here we are again, another year where you're not getting good enough quarterback play to win.
So, Brent, if I think about something specific I want to see from Tennessee against Tennessee Tech, the thing I keep thinking about, turnovers. Tennessee is -5 turnovers through two games, and they've yet to get a turnover on defense. Does Byron Young finally playing maybe help in that? Obviously, Tennessee Tech could help in that department, but Byron Young getting pressure, is that something that can help Tennessee? And is that, if you're, I don't know what is important other than getting out of this game healthy and winning big, but is that something you're watching in this game?
Well, no doubt. I mean, I think Tennessee has got to find a way. Now, let's put a big qualifier on everything here. You don't want to make an overjudgment coming out of this game if suddenly they force three turnovers, because you got to understand the competition that they're playing. But this team to force turnovers is going to have to get some pressure with four defensive linemen and not have to bring a blitz every time. Basically, the only way they're getting home against Pitt is they got two sacks. Both of them were on blitzes. They never forced Kenny Pickett uncomfortable when Tennessee was playing zone behind them in the secondary, which is typically where more of your interceptions come from, is in a zone defense versus man-to-man. So can Tennessee find a way to generate a pass rush where they can play some zone behind them, particularly in third long situations, which they've not been able to do? The hope is that Byron Young can provide that. I think it's important to get his feet wet this week and kind of get him going before you head into the Florida game, to hopefully you can create some pass rush, that you've got Byron Young on one side, Tyler Barron on the other, and maybe you can get to the quarterback, which you've just not been able to do with a front four.
Brent, we will not see the Vols back at home until October the 9th against South Carolina after tomorrow's matchup against Tennessee Tech. There's been talk this week about attendance at Neyland Stadium to begin the season. Is there too much chatter in regards to who's not there so far?
Well, I mean, I think it's a story, because you're not, you know, it was a pretty big game last week. I know it was a noon start, but that was a pretty big game, and it wasn't a full house by any stretch of the imagination. I think everybody around the country, for the most part, is dealing with that a little bit. I know, you know, at Ohio State, because Oregon was there, I'm sure they were filled up pretty well for that one. And some other spots, it's pretty good. But I think the challenge right now is, because Tennessee's not been very good, because there was some comfort that was created a year ago by not going to the game and watching it on TV, then I think you got some people who are going, yeah, you know what, I'm not sure it's worth the hassle to go. You know, and that's why you're seeing Tennessee talk about a lot of fan amenities. How can we help that? What can we do better? That's a big part of what Danny White's talking about moving forward, because I think the challenge for everybody at any kind of sporting venue setting is, how do you sell tickets? how do you battle the man cave and the 70-inch television that you can now get for $300 on a, you know, Black Friday Christmas sale? That's a hard challenge right now. Okay, am I going to drive 7 hours to a game, or am I going to stay home, have the ability to watch five games at one time in my man cave and end up saving a bunch of money on football games? I think that's the hard part that every AD and administrator at the college level is dealing with. And quite frankly, I think you're dealing with it in some other sports as well.
And while we're discussing the stadium, on the facilities front, the state approved the second phase of the renovations to Neyland Stadium. When will all of that occur?
Well, you got starting at the end of the final home game this season, you'll start construction movement. Tennessee plans to have, before the start of next season, renovation to the west side and the lower bowl. They're going to do some club seats there. And then in the north end zone, they're going to do a jumbotron in the north end zone and kind of a patio sports bar type setting venue out around that jumbotron. Tennessee's going to end up losing about 4,800 seats, I think, moving some people around. I don't know if they're going to lose all those seats. They're going to have to move some people around that way. So that'll change a little bit of the ticket stuff you were talking about. And then on the south end, they're not going to replace the structure of the jumbotron. They're going to replace the screen on the jumbotron from a, so it matches the north end from a technology standpoint. Phase two also approves demolition in South Stadium Hall, which has been the biggest hang up for the renovation of the south end. I don't know exactly when that's going to start. I don't think that's going to be this year, but that phase is already approved. Now, part of that from the master plan of the university is you got to get everybody out of there who's been working in there for the last 15 years since this whole plan originated with Mike Hamilton. So I don't think you're ready to start the south end at this point, but that's where it's going from here.
Brent, quickly, what's the weather forecast looking like tomorrow? Is there going to be rain in this game?
Overnight rain, but the latest forecast, according to the Corrington Doppler, is that rain's going to be out about 8:15 in the morning. And so hopefully we'll be dry for the rest of the afternoon. I think kickoff temperature is going to be mid-70s. Should be a great day. It's going to be overcast, not huge and bright, sunny and heat. But there is going to be some overnight rain, but it should be out early in the morning.
Hey, Chad and I are headed to Gainesville. You say to hit up V Pizza?
I'm a fan. That's actually a franchise all their ingredients come from Italy. The recipes is handed down from several generations from Italy. Some really good pizza. There's one of those in Jacksonville where the original is. There's one in Gainesville. And ironically, there's one in Cary, North Carolina, of all places. But I hit up the one, and I've actually eaten at the one in Cary, North Carolina. It was good. And I hit up the one in Jacksonville when Tennessee was playing in one of those tax slayer bowls. I'm a fan of it. I think it's good food. So, yes, it would get my recommendation.
Chad has just looked this up.
I'm already on the website, Brent. You've sold me. I'm ready to go.
Now, we may say goodbye here, but we'd like you to spend 3 minutes in the lobby completing your exit time.
Is my table ready yet? That's all I need to know, Paul. Is my table ready yet?
If you don't mind, there's a five-minute survey at the end of this call, if you don't mind taking it for us, Brent. We'd appreciate it. Hey, man.
Absolutely, guys. Hey, guys.
Appreciate you.
Thanks.
Absolutely. Appreciate you guys. Have a great weekend, all right?
Yeah, thanks, you too. Brent Hubbs, VolQuest.com, has been our guest. Very patient Brent Hubbs today. And again, my apologies to
right
both Austin and Brent.
He's the right man for the job out of all of the people.
Austin did his part. He tried to give me a heads up that he was leaving early, and for whatever reason, I read that to mean he was the only one on.
You know, it's patience.
Austin had to get somewhere, clearly.
It's patience, yeah, no doubt. With a seatbelt. It's patience that allows a person like Brent Hubbs to tolerate people like us. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. Coming up, Titans and Seahawks. The biggest matchups we're paying attention to and how the Titans go on the road and leave with a big road win. That's all straight ahead on Outkick 360. So if you're curious, hey, I wonder if the wake-up call that the Titans received this past Sunday against the Cardinals carried over to the practice week where they snapped into it. Based on what I have been told, it has been a very solid, focused week of practice for the Tennessee Titans. Welcome back, Outkick 360.
Every week is.
Yes. I think there is a renewed sense of urgency.
Vigor.
Yeah, urgency. I'm curious to see how Seattle comes into this game. They have won 12 straight home openers in this stadium. It is not an easy place to play, and this will be the loudest venue the Titans have played in since at least Arrowhead at the AFC Championship game in 2019. I mean, it's been a while. There are a lot of different varying factors of this game that I'm intrigued by, Paul. What's first? What's top of mind to you?
Well, just speaking to your point about the noise, there were a lot of questions this week about silent count because they haven't had to run silent count sometimes. Last year, obviously, noise at stadiums was not a big issue because stadiums were at reduced capacity. Mike Vrabel said, yeah, it's like riding a bike, but you're going to fall off the bike probably a couple times. So that'll be an interesting issue. You would suspect if Seattle wins the toss, it defers. Titans open with the ball against a very loud crowd.
Timeouts on defense.
Yeah, and how do they handle the incredible noise is going to be part of the story of this game. And they've been very good at that in the past. They need to be very good at it again.
Chad, you're intrigued to see how this team responds after a week of chatter following the butt-kicking they received against the Cardinals.
A lot of talk from this team that's 0-1 after getting destroyed in the first game. Some of that talk coming from A.J. Brown on Twitter about our discussion yesterday about his tweet about loving everyone and everybody doing their best. He tweets us and says, "Look, you three clowns. Yes, I called you a clown because y'all have a lot to say and never played a sport in your life, but knows everything somehow. I do not tweet about my job or my team. You can be negative. That's fine. But stop trying to make something out of my tweets." David Reed said this, and I agree. When you go to the old defense of you never played a sport, that is you admitting that intellectually you cannot hang with whoever you're talking to. So there's no intellectual response from A.J. Brown on that. So it's just you three guys who never played a sport. All three of us, by the way, have played sports, not at the NFL level. But when you go to
Paul's
that,
a Hall of Famer.
That's you saying that you can't. That's right. Paul is an Athletic Hall of Famer, A.J., so you better check yourself before you wreck yourself. I mean, it's ridiculous.
How do you not see Paul,
it's
not
also
the
ridiculous to claim that you don't tweet about your team or your job when you respond to Paul Kuharsky, a writer covering your team, with a tweet about your teammate, and in that tweet, you right there, the evidence was there. You're talking about your job, your team, your teammate in that tweet. That tweet was later deleted. This one probably will be at some point.
He's got 138,000 followers. They're following him because he's a football player. When the theme of the week is that the team didn't put forth much effort, and you tweet out about how everybody's trying their best, it's a logical connection.
Even if it's very broad, he's covering the Titans in that broad statement.
It's a very easy dot-to-dot connection. I don't understand why be cryptic and defensive.
A.J. Brown's not the problem with Sunday. I mean, we said that yesterday. But he's got to be part of the solution with his offense Sunday.
No, look, I like that A.J. Brown showing some fight on this a little bit. I mean, at least there's something there, but it's a team that's going to have to show a lot more life on Sunday. And it's funny with all these things. You know, it's very easy if they go out and he has 150 yards receiving and two touchdowns and the Titans win, it's going to be a lot of,
We showed you clowns.
What's up? And then if he doesn't do well, which is also not the case, you know, it's going to be easy to come back and say, boy, you know, maybe I say something like, I don't see DK Metcalf tweeting things about positive thoughts and T-ball type tweets.
You're going to go out and extend your hand so Retro can take a photo of you not extending your hand today?
I don't feel compelled to say anything.
We weren't even hard on the guy. I went back and watched what we said.
I don't even remember what we said. I just know that we referenced that tweet.
It wasn't much there.
There's an idea. Don't tweet.
They've got to. Well, do whatever. I mean, AJ's fine. I mean, I don't mind his attitude and mentality and approach to the game. Like, there's we appreciate the alpha quality.
I will say though, I like the fight in that he's concerned about something and showing that. That is not an alpha mentality. That's a very delicate rabbit ears mentality. That is not something needs to be tweeting about.
There have been rabbit ears this week.
They're very sensitive. Based on that. And the first tweet, I'll repeat what we said yesterday that he doesn't like. Very sensitive tweet that media members pick up on. Bravo, amen, yes, let's all be nice. And we're all trying hard, and we're just trying our best.
Promote positivity.
I told Evie's softball team, her T-ball softball team, that after the game the other night. That's what you tell them. Guys, just do your best. That's all that matters. Do your best. This is professional football. And when you're a professional football player tweeting that, yes, you're talking about everyone criticizing you and your teammates after a poor performance. We're not dumb. You're not tweeting about something else going on.
And we're not holding this team to the same standard that we would hold Jacksonville in expectations. Not standard, expectations.
Now, I'll also say I want A.J. Brown to get everyone else going the direction A.J. Brown normally goes.
He and Henry.
That's what the team needs.
Paul, they need play action to work Sunday.
Yes, I particularly think if play action works, like Bettingfield suggested this, Bobby Wagner and Jamal Adams are clearly the two best players on this defense. You want them in coverage, not coming forward, which is where they do most of their damage, right? Mm-hmm. Not that they're terrible in coverage, but it's where they're least good and least damaging. So get them away from the line.
And you also pointed out at your site that they will likely want Lockett matched up or try to find a matchup with Tyler Lockett and Elijah Molden.
They're pretty good at getting the matchups that they want.
Based on personnel.
Yeah, and Tyler Lockett, obviously, Lockett and Metcalf, both very speedy. But if you get Lockett on Molden, Molden's lacking in the speed department. And you can get behind him, and that's obviously a place that people are going to want to attack. Christian Fulton was good week one. Jackrabbit Jenkins, not as good. Hopefully he'll have better footing in the Pacific Northwest than he had in the Southeast.
Chad and I are going to try pizza and the Spurrier Burger this weekend in Gainesville. What will you be having in Seattle?
I'll have...
Because you don't drink coffee.
I'll have some seafood on Sunday evening for certain.
Very jealous of that. Well, we could get some seafood this weekend, Chad.
We could, yeah, but problem is...
Chad's going to point out that it's not a coastal town.
Thank you, yeah. We could, Hutton, but we're landlocked in Gainesville.
It's a few hours. They do bring fish eastward. They even bring it to Nashville.
I'd rather have the pizza that Brent Hub sold me on.
You're going to have more than one meal, I'm guessing.
David Reed compared this airport to San Diego, where you fly in between the city, like right over the top of the city. He says you're going to fly in on the swamp. We'll be like... The gator
and that's
show
when
or
Chad will begin doing his gator chomps.
Fitting right. Tribute during to that landing. Place that you fly into a swamp.
For 10K. The 10K has been raised, by the way. Congratulations to everybody for raising that money.
Hey, it's going to be a fun weekend.
For the Withrow Foundation.
And it's going to be a lively Monday, no matter what happens with the Titans and Seahawks. If they come back 0-2, jam-packed show. If they come back 1-1, there's a lot to discuss there, too, because they answered and righted a lot of wrongs from what happened in week one. We hope you'll join us 3-6 Eastern, 2-5 Central on Monday. Looking forward to that. Paul, travel safe.
You guys as well.
Big thanks to Dylan Taylor for helping make the show happen today. Jonathan Moulton, who was in for Jacob Swanson. And, of course, the chairman of the board sits over to our left, David Reed. We are live tomorrow morning. Live tomorrow morning, Saturday morning, 9 to noon Eastern. And 8 o'clock Central is when we go live from Gainesville. Full college football coverage across the OutKick Network. Looking forward to it, Chad. Let's get after it.
Cannot wait. Remember, we're all just trying our best.
You've got 2 days to practice. Not blocking the box, locking the lock.
Hit us up on Twitter at OutKick360.
Hey, it's Jonathan Hutton. Thanks for listening to OutKick 360. Be sure to subscribe to the show to have the latest podcast delivered to you each and every day. And give us 5 stars. It helps us grow our network and provide you with more great podcasts like this one.